In the meditation of mental quiescence, in the nine states of mind, there is a state where striving must be abandoned. An effortless concentration is necessary at a certain stage. It is effortless, that means your mind becomes very tranquil, with good qualities and its character complete. At that moment, if you make an effort, it will disturb your tranquility. So, in order to maintain that pure tranquility, effortless effort must be used. We learn from the principle of dependent origination that things and events do not come into being without causes. Suffering and unsatisfactory conditions are caused by our own delusions and the contaminated actions induced by them. Guilt, as experienced in Western culture, is connected with hopelessness and discouragement and is past-oriented. Genuine remorse, however, is a healthy state of mind. It is future-oriented, connected with hope, and causes us to act, to change. To study a text, we should take into account the circumstances, the situation, the time, the society, and the community where a book was originally written or a teaching taught. Some people might ask, if everything is an illusion, what is the use of getting rid of illusory suffering with an antidote that is itself illusory? The answer is that, while illusory suffering is the result of causes and conditions that are also illusory, we still suffer from it, and we certainly do not want to. The same is true of happiness. It is an illusion too, but it is still something we want. Thus, illusory antidotes are used to get rid of illusory sufferings, just as a magician uses one magical illusion to counteract another. What is endeavor? It is finding joy in doing what is good. To do that, it is necessary to remove anything that counteracts it, especially laziness. Related to these is taking undue pleasure in idleness and sleep, and being indifferent to samsara as a state of suffering. Cloning is an easy, accurate reproduction that implies that we are putting an end to our evolutionary possibilities. We declare that we are perfect and we stop there. And if we do attain immortality, that is, if we suppress our death, by the same token we will have to suppress birth, because the earth would become too rapidly overburdened. One thing can't be doubted. The possibility of the quality of deeper understanding is within us. It is called prajna. We can deny everything except that we have the possibility of being better. Simply reflect on that. When we encounter some problem and when someone is about to harm us, then immediately we cultivate anger. Anger comes as a helper or assistant because it makes us bold and courageous and we can retaliate and hit back. When attachment comes, it also comes like our best or closest friend. So anger and attachment are part of our mind, an innate part, and normally we take them for granted and do not bother much about them when they arise within us. Since they come as our friend or helper, therefore, anger and attachment can really deceive us. Faith dispels doubt and hesitation. It liberates you from suffering and delivers you to the city of peace and happiness. Faith removes your anxiety and makes your mind clear. Faith reduces your pride and is the root of reverence. Faith is like a beautiful lake because it lets you easily traverse from one stage of the spiritual path to another. It is like your own hand which can gather all the virtuous qualities. Buddha never mentioned that the problems we have encountered are the result of misconstruction of a house or starting a project or work on an inappropriate day or time. Buddha always talked about the negative experiences as a result of having performed negative actions. So for a good practitioner, there is no new year, there is no good day, and no bad day. As far as your personal requirements are concerned, the ideal is to have fewer involvements, fewer obligations, and fewer affairs, business, or whatever. However, so far as the interest of the larger community is concerned, you must have as many involvements as possible and as many activities as possible. Within oneself, within each single person, one finds many inconsistencies and contradictions. Sometimes the disparity between one's thoughts early and late in the day is so great that one spends all one's energy trying to figure out how it can be resolved. This can lead to headaches. So naturally, between two persons, between parents and children, between brothers and sisters, there are differences. Conflicts and disagreements are bound to happen. If so, then how do we deal with them? If we have confidence in our capacity for reconciliation, then we will be able to deal with these situations. When we talk of the six perfections, generosity, ethical discipline, patience, perseverance, concentration, and wisdom, they can also be found in other non-bodhisattva practitioners who are working more toward their own individual liberation. What makes the practice of these six factors perfect is the motivation involved. In order for one's practice of patience to be a practice of the perfection of patience, you need the motivation which is bodhicitta. If your practice is motivated by bodhicitta, the aspiration to attain enlightenment for the benefit of all beings, then your practice truly becomes a practice of perfection. The earth is, to a certain extent, our mother. She is so kind because, whatever we do, she tolerates it. But now the time has come when our power to destroy is so extreme that Mother Earth is compelled to tell us to be careful. The population explosion and many other indicators make that clear, don't they? Nature has its own natural limitations. Tranquil or calm abiding is a heightened state of awareness possessing a very single-pointed nature, accompanied by faculties of mental and physical suppleness. Your body and mind become especially flexible, receptive, and serviceable. Special insight is a heightened state of awareness, also accompanied by mental and physical suppleness, in which your faculty of analysis is immensely advanced. Thus, calm abiding is absorptive in nature, whereas special insight is analytic in nature. Peace is of little value to someone who is dying of hunger or cold. It will not remove the pain of torture inflicted on a prisoner of conscience. It does not comfort those who have lost their loved ones in floods caused by senseless deforestation in a neighboring country. Peace can only last where human rights are respected, where the people are fed, and where individuals and nations are free. True peace with ourselves and with the world around us can only be achieved through the development of mental peace. First we must help, then later we can talk about the causes of any tragedy. There is an Indian saying, if you are struck by a poisonous arrow, it is important first to pull it out. There is no time to ask who shot it, what sort of poison it is, and so on. First handle the immediate problem and later investigate. Similarly, when we encounter human suffering, it is important to respond with compassion rather than to question the politics of those we help. In the correlation between ethics and politics, should deep moral convictions form the guideline for the political practitioner, man and his society will reap far-reaching benefits. It is an absurd assumption that religion and morality have no place in politics, and that a man of religion should seclude himself as a hermit. I believe in justice and in human determination. In the history of man, it has already been proved that the human will is more powerful than the gun. So, although for us this is the toughest period in our history, I quite firmly believe that the Tibetan people, their culture, and the Tibetan faith will survive, will flourish once again. When others succeed, rather than being unhappy and hateful, we should rejoice.